one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, a nice weekend by the Phillies in Minnesota. Man, seems like this team knows how to do one of two things, drive us crazy or get us all hyped up again. I mean, it was an incredibly fun weekend watching the Phillies take on the Twins in Minnesota. So we'll break down all aspects of the games on Saturday and Sunday. I know Justin and Liz, they broke down the Field of Dreams game on Thursday, and they did that in a terrific fashion. So you can listen to the Friday edition of the podcast if you want to listen to that. But we're going to tackle Saturday and Sunday here on this edition of the Roundtable. And we'll dip in quickly to the hitting season mailbag. Got a few mailbag questions that we will answer here at the end of the show. Joining me are my podcast partners, my roundtable pals, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, is one of the fine writers over at Baseball Prospectus. He's got a new book out called Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the Phillies were doing in 1941 while Joe DiMaggio was going on that record hitting streak. I paraphrased the subheading a little bit there, but you guys get the idea. Justin will help me out with that in just a second. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, I'm very tired.
Summer of the Cheap Wieners. What Joe did, well, I got wrong too.
Oh, you know see what I did there? See what I did there?
I think
1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history.
I think it's actually we're up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history.
Oh, man, none of us
take
can get
a couple
it right
of those words and put them in the right order and you'll get the book. Look, what I want to talk about is how you mentioned the Field of Dreams game. And that's always a fun little event, and maybe it's less fun if the Phillies don't win it this year. But I just wanted to call out a moment we didn't talk about in our last episode, which was when Cody Clemens and his father Roger Clemens had a catch at the Field of Dreams field after the game. That really, you know, on a night that's all about baseball and fathers and sons, really taught us what baseball is all about. Throwing a piece of a broken bat at an opposing player because your roided out brain has convinced you that he did it on purpose.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd choice for them to take a half of a sawed off bat and just start throwing it at each other. It was an interesting take on the Field of Dreams moment. But
excellent if they had just started throwing a piece of a bat back and forth from each other because it's the Clemens style, having a catch.
Yeah, this is what we did all the time growing up. Why? I know it's. I don't see what's so weird about it, frankly. But yeah, I was.
That caught me totally by surprise. Oh my god!
Totally. I mean, I'm glad they got the other media out of the way, you know, before they started. That was just all around there. That was a good job by them. You got Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal, joining us as well. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
I'm good. One thing about the Cody and Roger interaction is they had Cody talking. He was mic'd up during the game, and he and his dad were talking. And at one point, his dad just said, "I love you, son." And he's like, "I love you too, man." And I'm like, "Holy crap!" Like it was
real
just
emotions
nice
happening in front of
well,
us.
Well, it was just like awful. You know, I feel like there are some dads out there who are trying to make up for maybe the lack of emotion their own fathers showed them. And I kind of like that. They're a little bit more emotional, a little more in touch with how they feel. I thought that was kind of cool.
It's great.
The roided up Roger Clemens would not have done that.
No,
you don't think an MLB rep handed him a card that was like, "Hey, give us an I love you for the national audience. Go ahead. Throw it out there.
I love you, son." No, that's not right. "I love you, son." No, hang on. I get it. Yeah. No, I think I agree with you, Liz. It was a nice moment. It's a very nice thing. We are cynical about these kinds of things, but it was a very sweet moment. And yeah,
it was
I agree.
Lovely. Yeah.
It was very cool. It was very cool to watch them play catch or have a catch. I don't know. I have used both in my life. I think both are fine. I think getting on a hill and dying on one of those hills is not one that I'm necessarily fond of. But do you guys feel strongly about it one way or the other?
Nope.
No.
Okay, great. Moving on. We will talk about what happened after the Phillies left Iowa and moseyed on over to Minneapolis. And I think we have to ask the question, did the Iowa cornfield save the Phillies, guys? I mean, it's on everyone's mind. The Phillies now powered by ethanol as they are getting ready for this last 38 game sprint here, and started it with two pretty incredible games against the Twins in Minnesota, blowing them out on Saturday, and a massive comeback on Sunday. So, Liz, let me ask you, are they powered by corn?
Well, on Friday's podcast, Justin and I were talking about this, and I made the point that in the movie Field of Dreams, the cornfield is a metaphor for death. Yeah. And so in a way, you can say that the Phillies did walk away from death with this series against the Twins, because it was a pretty good one.
Are you claiming reincarnation here, Liz, as we're recording this podcast?
No, I'm claiming they almost died and have narrowly avoided it.
I see. Okay.
Or something like that. You know, I feel like everyone gets the gist of what I'm saying.
I do. Justin, did Iowa's cornfield save the Phillies?
I mean... yeah, okay, we can, sure.
Like, do you at this want point, me to explain my position more?
No, I feel like you were clear. I feel like we got that. That was, the death thing. The death part of baseball is coming through loud and clear. Don't worry about that. It's fortunate they don't make them leave through the cornfield, too, because, you know, again, sending a strange message. But regardless, this is you can kind of phrase winning in a season like this with different adjectives depending on like where you are in the winning. And the Phillies haven't been doing a lot of winning. Obviously, losing 6 of 8 series coming into this and haven't swept a team since June. That's pretty brutal for a team with playoff aspirations. And we all know that magic date of June 10th. Apparently, the Phillies have just been like basically a 500 team since then. But when they start winning again. And it's like just against the Twins and like other factors are involved. They haven't really, you know, they're not like this is the potential to be a hot streak, but it's not yet a hot streak. So the phrase you keep seeing this described as is much needed wins, which is really, I think, the safest and most correct way to describe what went on in Minnesota and also Iowa. If we look back on this and say like, yeah, it turns out it was the Field of Dreams game that was the point that things kind of like turned around and they hit that hot streak that Liz and I were saying that we were confident they were going to find again before end of the season. If that has to start somewhere. And if it started in Iowa, great. If that's what it took, like another little, you know, this team really feeds off bursts, you know, like, oh, the manager was fired. That's suddenly kicked everything. Oh, this rookie's coming up to play. Okay. Yeah. That's a boost. Playing in a cornfield on national television. Sure. I mean, you know, Alec Bohm's from Nebraska. Maybe he's standing by that all of the corn suddenly, you know, he's suddenly at the peak of his powers just because, you know, that was just familiar to him. Who knows? But that would be great. To be able to point at that game as a real turnaround for this team, that'd be fantastic. All I know is they won 3 games in a row. That's what this team needed to do, and we were sick of seeing them do the other thing. So for now, I'm going to stick with 3 much needed wins.
Well, and really 3 wins you had to have against a bad baseball team. The Minnesota Twins are not a good baseball team this year.
Well, they've been playing bad baseball teams for the last like 8 weeks, it feels like.
And that's true,
they've tended to struggle regardless. So
the Phillies don't, their opponent almost doesn't matter most of the time because they are good enough to beat even the best teams, and they can play terribly enough to lose to the worst teams and lose to them often. And so I think they got a little energy. I think they got a little energy going to Iowa. I think that put a little spring in their step. It was a really nice win on Thursday, and they carried that over into the game on Saturday. But talking about Sunday's game, it really didn't look like they were going to finish off the sweep. It certainly felt like one of those missed opportunities that we've seen this team have over the last couple of years, where they win the first 2 games and then lose the finale and they miss a chance for a sweep. We saw that a lot over the last couple of years. I don't think we've seen that as much this year. This Phillies team hasn't had as many opportunities to sweep teams, I don't feel like, this year, without having gone back and taken a look. But the record would certainly indicate that. They've just lost more games. But to fall down 4-0 on a grand slam in the first inning, and then 5-0 in the third inning after Cody Clemens hits a solo home run, I just didn't see the Phillies picking themselves up off the mat. They blew a few opportunities in the first few innings of the game. But then in the sixth inning, they get a three-run home run from Alec Bohm. That draws them to within one. Then they get three more in the eighth with Brian De La Cruz, who has been the team's best offensive outfielder since his call-up on July 22nd, hits a two-run, two-out single to right field to put the Phillies ahead for good 7-5. And De La Cruz has a 956 OPS since joining the Phillies. He's the only Phillies outfielder with an OPS plus over 100 since he joined the team on July 22nd. And the offense all weekend long, guys, was consistent. Bob Vitrone of the Philly Daily News noted that on Thursday in the Cornfield game, eight Phillies starters got a hit. JT was the only one who did not. On Saturday, eight Phillies starters got a hit. Kyle Schwarber was the only one who did not. And on Sunday, seven Phillies starters got a hit. Marsh and JT did not. So they're getting a lot of hits. It's coming together for the offense a little bit. They had a couple of bad games there at the end of the series going into Iowa. But overall, the Phillies offense has been doing a lot better as of late, Justin. And I guess this is kind of what you need, even against a bad pitching staff. The Phillies have struggled against bad pitching staffs, too. So good to see all around. I mean, you can't hang your hat on anything with this team ever in any way, shape, or form. So we just have to live in the moment. That's why this podcast is so schizophrenic.
So like what? The clock chimed at some point last week and everything changed again. Did we not just spend 2 weeks talking about, oh, is this team even going to make the playoffs? Alec Bohm is a below average or below replacement level player. And this is it's a malpractice by Dave Dombrowski. And then, like, not only do they sweep somebody in dramatic fashion, but Alec Bohm is, like, the centerpiece of an offensive onslaught that if you had were going off the descriptions and lamentations about this team from last week, you would think they were never going to get a hit again. And I'm not criticizing everything was valid. It just feels like, yeah, I mean, it you stop being able to describe it. But really this is in some ways still more of the same in that not just the broad inconsistent nature of this offense, but the fact that, like I said, they tend to feed off dramatic bursts or moments, but they also really can get three guys going at a time. And that's it. Earlier, it was Schwarber, Harper, and Marsh. Those guys all literally have the three lowest batting averages among the starters since the All-Star break now. Then for a little while, like Real Muto, Turner, and Bohm were kind of doing it right after the All-Star game, but Real Muto fell off, and now Stott's in there instead. And now we've got this, like, oh, Bryson Stott is this wonderful all-around player narrative that just started. When did that start? Like early last week? And then you look at the numbers, yeah. And you're like, hey, yeah, right. And then you spend a week talking about how terrible Alec Bohm is. And then, John, you send us that show sheet where it's like, yeah, he's actually been their best hitter since the All-Star break. What are you talking about? Yeah, what are we talking about?
What is happening?
So at the end of the weekend, you got like Stott playing like an All-Star and looking like he's been playing third base his entire life. And you got Alec Bohm going 5-for-5 in one game. And they're like, oh, you know, it's the first time he ever did that. And you're like, yeah, no kidding. That'd be the first time.
That's not surprising.
Most guys have ever done that, and we're talking about Alec Bohm, and then, you know, Brian De La Cruz being another one of those guys who just pops in and is like, oh, I can help, I can be helpful, and, you know, having guys like him and Derek Hill just kind of like stick their heads in and do something crazy and helpful, whether it's a hit or a diving catch or just a grounder that gets past first base, like De La Cruz's double today, I mean, that's the kind of contributions you need, and, yeah, it's the difference is just the Phillies get them or they don't. And they haven't been getting them for a while, and it hasn't all just been bad luck. It's been, you know, late, sloppy looking approaches and the same kind of low morale, joyless baseball we've seen them play before. And then they come out and they play a series like this, and you're like, all right, whatever, man. Like, yeah. Just there's three wild card spots, I guess. You guys can get in there. This was, you know, I don't sound like I'm complaining about the three game sweep, but, like, you know, this was the first one since June for a reason. And if this offense is going to play like they played against the Twins, then yeah, it's going to be a really electrifying September. And the Phillies can really separate themselves from the pack because that start, that Andrew Painter start today, the series finale, that was the kind of win that I feel like you just don't see this team make. We've seen them come back before, but we so rarely see them bail out their starters, which is why all this pressure is on the starting pitchers to pitch well and pitch deeply into games because you don't want the bullpen and you can't rely on the offense to bail you out. But they did it. They did it, and they made it look easy. So if that's what they want to do, and that's what they can, that's what they're capable of moving into September, that's exactly when they need to, they're getting the timing exactly right. You can point to the Padres and say they did it too early. The Phillies are lining it up exactly right to be heading into the last 6 weeks of the season or whatever and playing and being able to hit like this, because it is, whew, it is different. It is definitely different. Yeah. But like I said, there's still elements of this that are the same.
Baseball's fun when your team is hitting. Baseball is not fun when your team is not hitting. And that's really what it is with this team.
Phillies could be doing
hits,
either. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. When this team hits, they're fun to watch. When this team doesn't hit, they're not at all fun to watch. Matter of fact, they're quite brutal to watch. But I mean, last week I was certainly among those calling for Alec Boehm to be benched. I was concerned more about Bryce Harper's knee in right field, and I'm just like, having Boehm in the lineup every day is not worth risking Bryce Harper's knee. But when you're going 5-for-5 and then you're having a 3-run home run and a 4 RBI day the next day on Sunday, when you have an 846 OPS in your last 27 games, 3 homers, 7 doubles, 20 RBIs. I mean, Alec Boehm's not coming out of the lineup. I get it, you know, and Bryson Stott has been really on fire since the start of June. He's the highest wins above replacement on the Phillies, Liz, at 3.4. He made a ridiculous play at second today after making some ridiculous plays at third base. And I'll be honest with you. I have not been the biggest Bryson Stott guy. I really thought that the ceiling, that he'd hit it, that he wasn't going to get back to where he was in 2023. And since June 4th, he has an 856, an 865 OPS and a 404 on base percentage. I mean, he's putting it all together right now. I want to be able to depend on it. I want to be able to say, yes, these guys are going to continue it. And so again, we're just reveling in the moment here, gang. We're not making any declarations about this team, are we?
No, absolutely not. Just as Justin said, the team is still very inconsistent at times, and it's hard to trust that they're going to continue doing what they did this weekend, as joyful as it was, against more difficult teams. Or even just teams that they have historical trouble with. It would be nice to see them grab a hold of the reins. And it's what, the Marlins next, I think? Did I see that?
Yep, Marlins at home.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what we always say, but they should be able to, you know, put a dent in them a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see them do that. And that would go a long way towards at least showing us some consistency. Like, going there and winning 2 out of 3 is what I would like. They should not win. They should not lose 2 games to these Marlins. They should not.
This is going to be a very important wild card week homestand for the Phillies. They have 3 games against the Cardinals at Citizens Bank Park. I mean, against the Marlins, and then 3 against the Cardinals next weekend at Citizens Bank Park. So it's a 6-game homestand, but against 2 teams that are right behind them in the wild card standing. So yeah, this is an opportunity for them to put a little distance between them and those 2 teams that are standing right behind them. They have done well in their Aaron Nola and Andrew Painter starts in terms of winning these games. Andrew Painter, you mentioned a second ago, Justin, had a rough first inning in this one. He was all over the place. Again, I still don't know what to make of this guy. There are times he reminds me of Brandon Duckworth, and other times he does look like the guy we were expecting to see. But he's really struggled in first innings this year. He has a 9.56 ERA in the first inning. That's the highest of any starter in baseball this year. So the first inning is a problem for Painter.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It is the highest by a Phillies pitcher since Paul Byrd had a 14.11 ERA in the first inning in his starts back in 2000. So it kind of comes and goes with Andrew Painter right now, Liz. And I don't know what to make of this guy, 5 inning, but he did keep them in the game. Right, he gave up those runs early, but then just gave up 1 run in his last 4 innings. He only got 2 strikeouts on the day. The ERA's almost 6.5. Like, it's nothing's impressive, really, but he also was getting some decent swing and miss on his fastball. Like, there's little signs here and there. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad he kept him in the game. I'm glad he showed some tenacity, and after having the really rough first inning, seemed to recover. And I guess if you're going to take positives, I mean, this is going to be a positive podcast today. That's a positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. We have no choice but to rationalize because he's the only option they have. I mean, what else are they going to do? If they had a better option than Andrew Painter, he'd be in there. So they don't. And so I'm fine with watching him do this. It's frustrating and uncomfortable, but I'm hoping that he continues to grow, because you could see the flashes here and there, and I hope you can continue to see more of them. Like, what he did in the first inning was unconscionable, but keeping them in the game throughout was, you know, for the rest of it was not easy. You know, when you give up in first inning like that, all, it's so easy to fall apart. And I think he knew that he was going to have to stay in the game no matter what. And so he made the best of it. And I appreciate that. He actually did a good job. And he allowed him keeping it where it was allowed the Phillies to mount a comeback and a successful one.
I'll tell you the worrying part is he sure did throw that pitch he gave up for a grand slam. That was like the second time in a row he threw that exact pitch and almost gave up a grand slam. It wasn't good enough to almost do it.
He had to actually do it.
I'm gonna stick my head back in the lion's mouth here and see what happens. But yeah, it's positive.
And that's kind of on Real Muto also. Mm-hmm. I mean, he called for the same pitch in the same location, or a similar pitch in the same location, two pitches in a row, and he should have learned after he hung the first one, and the guy just missed a grand slam. He just asked for the same thing, and he hung it again. He wasn't going to miss the two in a row.
However, positives. Yes. You know, that was one incident. It's one of those unfortunate incidents that results in the most amount of runs you can allow on a single pitch to occur. And obviously, the lead up to the grand slam was it's not super pleasant either. However, I feel like, again, what the Phillies wanted from Andrew Painter and what the Phillies want from their number five starter were actually two different things for a long time. They didn't, for a while anyway. They did not want him to be, okay, well, the expectation is he's going to pitch like a fifth starter. No, he's going to pitch like a top prospect as this guy they're going to build around in the future. You know, there's this huge arm that's central to their plans this season and beyond. But this fifth starter role is obviously somebody that you could have scooped out of the rain barrel at the trade deadline, that they felt like they didn't need to do, because he had pitched well, what, once or twice against the Orioles and Nationals by that point. So I feel like that's left a kind of ambiguous sense as to what you should expect from Andrew Painter. Are you trying to see the number one prospect as rated by Baseball America? Or are you trying to get a guy who eats the innings at the end of the rotation? And I feel like at this point, yeah, I mean, you're kind of doing what we were doing with the offense earlier, which was, I guess this kind of is what it is. And we do just need to ride this out so that he can get through these innings and we can get through these innings. And hopefully there's more run support and hopefully the bullpen, which, you know, also was better at times on Sunday, by the way.
Yeah, the bullpen was good this weekend, yeah.
But regardless, I think the safer assumption is just that Andrew Painter's going in there to make all the mistakes a recovering rookie is going to make while also trying to fulfill this role as the fifth starter during a playoff stretch. And that's kind of tough. It is two different things, but at the same time, you know, he makes one mistake or two mistakes and it results in a grand slam, and now the Phillies are in a hole. But that's also just part of the process of him being a rookie in a very stressful situation who is up here to hopefully get his groove back. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's why it's so important that these other aspects of the team come through, because he can get you a few innings that we've seen, but he can't do it by himself, especially on days where he's a rookie and he's gonna throw a pitch and he shouldn't have thrown twice in a row.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, he finishes the season strong. I'm not sure what he probably goes if the Phillies get to the playoffs. He goes to the bullpen and maybe can really kind of air it out in shorter bursts in the bullpen in the playoffs, and then he gets an off season and you know, you hope that the top prospect version comes back around again. But here in 2026, you're not really holding out hope for that at this point. You just want somebody that's going to keep you in games. And so he did that on Sunday. That being said, this can't make it a habit of giving up four runs in the first inning, three runs in the first inning every start. You can't put your team in a hole like this every single time out there, which is unfortunately what he's been doing. But we'll take the good here more than the bad with this start here on Sunday.
Just to close the loop on it, he gave him five innings after that really rough first. And that pitch he gave up the grand slam on, yes, that was a mistake he shouldn't have thrown again, but that was a two-strike count. You know, that ball goes another way. That pitch goes another way. That inning's over, and, you know, you still get a five-inning performance from Andrew Painter, which is what you're looking for from a fifth starter. So, you know, it's fortunate they bailed him out. That's kind of the key difference here.
Yeah. For once, you're like you said, for once the offense bailed out the pitcher, which does not happen that often with this team. Couple other notes from the weekend in Minnesota. Jesus Luzardo was outstanding again on Saturday night.
Yes.
6 2/3 innings, gave up 7 hits, just 1 run, 2 walks. 9 more strikeouts for Jesus Luzardo. That ERA is down to 3.23. Man, he's their best pitcher right now. He just is. He is their very best pitcher right now as we're sitting here. If I had a Cy Young ballot, I would have Jesus Luzardo ahead of those other two guys at the moment. But this horse race keeps changing among the Phillies. I mean, none of these guys are going to get it from Jacob Mizorowski. That just seems like it's going to be an impossibility. But in terms of these three guys, it's like a horse race where they just keep changing positions. You know, 1 month it's Sanchez when he's going 50 some odd scoreless innings, and then Zach Wheeler all of a sudden takes the lead, and now Jesus Luzardo is the hottest one out of the bunch. And I just think it's fascinating that as Sanchez and Wheeler really have kind of struggled a little bit here in these last few outings, and I have a little bit of concern about Wheeler, not at all concerned about Sanchez. I think on the whole Sanchez has been more good than not. Luzardo has been their stopper right now. He's kind of been their de facto ace as Wheeler and Sanchez have kind of been a little bit more up and down. So really good start on Saturday from Jesus Luzardo. And then Juan Duran. Hey, Juan Duran making his return to Minnesota. They did part of his little Durantula celebration up on the up on their video board, and he comes in and strikes out the side in his own ballpark in the ninth inning on Sunday. I don't know if you saw the first strikeout. I forget who it was, but batter lost the bat out of his hands and stumbled out of the batter's box. Yeah, that was unfortunate for him.
Beautiful.
But very cool to see Duran come back home and perform the way that he did. All right. I wanted to open up the mailbag here, and we got a couple of questions. We may have touched on some of these a little bit, but not a whole lot. I think we can kind of dive into these a little bit more. So we'll open up the Hittin' Season mailbag, and you can always send us an email too, by the way. It's hittinseason@billypenn.com, but all these came in through the X account. But if you want to send an email have some questions to the mailbag sent that way, hittinseason@billypenn.com. I can do some more on the midweek edition of the podcast. Might do that. At Big Phoenix 6741 asks, I know we're kind of over Boehm, right? But if he finishes out this season with a 730, and maybe we're not, but we'll just leave that out there. But if he finishes out this season with a 730 OPS or so, with strong defense at both corner spots, our guy Aiden Miller isn't ready yet because his back is stupid. Would you consider bringing Boehm back for 1 year and $10 million? Justin, you seem to have a reaction there when Big Phoenix 6741's question was first being asked. So let me throw that your way first.
So in this situation, he's playing third, though, again, right? Which is
probably
okay. So
yeah, because Bryce has gone back to first.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's the age-old issue. Yeah, he's among the free agents, but he's part of a free agent class that isn't going to necessarily make your eyes bulge out of your head, because guess who's back? It's Bo Bichette with an opt-out, potentially. And then after that,
love of God,
Eugenio Suarez, and then Alec Boehm's listed next to Anthony Rendon. So that's how serious this third-base class is. Yeah, and he's alongside Edmundo Sosa. So, like, This is the depth of the free agent class at third base. Infield in general is not, once again, we are not talking about a strong free agent class. So are you going to look at the trade scene and see something that you haven't seen every time you looked out there the last 4 years in regards to Alec Boehm? Some guys just wind up tethered to you, and it feels like Alec Boehm is just this connected to the Phillies in a way that, like, it's luck. It's just been luck and misfortune, and also just, you know, he has played well. He was an all-star. You know, we've all seen him make spectacular plays at third. Then he enters these stretches where it's just utterly hopeless. And we all know there was off the field stuff with him this year as well. So, at the end of the day, I think it's just good to see him hitting and, like, enjoying himself. Who knows how long patches like this are going to last with this team. But as far as Alec Boehm, I mean, yeah, like, I think you might once again find yourself in a position where you're like, well, I think we can improve. but I'm not sure that that now is the time. And it's been that time for the past, like, every time it's been reevaluate Alec Bohm time. That just seems to be the case. But, yeah, I can totally see it that, once again, Alec Bohm's just the answer because all the other answers don't sound any more appealing.
Yeah, Liz, the only way I see it is if he really flips the narrative here, like in September and October. Like, if he has some, he's got to have some hero moments to kind of wipe away some of the stink that's surrounded him over these last few years. I don't know. First of all, I don't think a 730 OPS is going to do it to you know, get fans feeling differently about him. And he's not going to have strong defense at both corner spots. Like, that's
if you just give him $10 million because he had a 730 OPS for another year. I mean, that's just like what you're doing in the outfield. Like, that's what that's the same coupon you're handing out there and getting a 1 year deal back. Like, I guess my response would be, can we really not do better? Is there really, truly not an area to, this is not an area we can improve. I just find that it becomes difficult to believe.
I agree. What do you think, Liz?
About Alec Bohm at third?
Yeah. Well, just like, yeah. Would you have him, would you consider 1 year, $10 million for Alec Bohm next year? Or are we just kind of at a point now where it's like, we got to move on?
I mean, I question whether he would want to come back, weirdly.
Yeah.
Whether he kind of wants a fresh start somewhere else. And I couldn't blame him for that if he did, because he knows that the fan base is very lukewarm, very switchy on him, and they don't quite, and that can't be a good feeling. You know, he's really in the spotlight on the Phillies, and he's been here for a long time, and so fans have an opinion of him. I mean, I would love to find a way to keep Bryson Stott at third. I would love to keep that going, because that seems to be a great place for him.
And he's going to play shortstop next year, and Trey Turner is going to the outfield.
Oh, you're right.
That's what's going to happen next year.
Well, that just so many problems.
Maybe they find another shortstop.
Will be available.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, hey, that's, I mean, look, I mean, I, there are worse ideas, right?
I'm not sure.
No one needs him to be reinfected.
Yeah. The shortstop class isn't even really a crack class. It's just kind of like a couple of guys hovering at the back of the room. It's J.P. Crawford, Ha-Seong Kim, and Jorge Mateo. So, do you want to
Korea? Is anybody from Korea or Japan or someplace like that? Maybe
I know there are some international guys out there, but I for the life of me, I can't remember any of their positions. But
where'd all the Cuban guys go? We used to be Cuban guys coming into the league every other year, like blowing the lid off the place. Where'd all the Cuban guys go?
Aren't they supposed to be hot on Teruaki Sato's tail in the?
Yeah, I saw
Japanese baseball,
the Japanese star. Yeah,
yeah, he's a third baseman. And an outfielder.
Well,
as far as Cubans, the way has been shut.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And so everyone knows why. The way has been shut for them. And it was like that even before, you know, things. Anyway, I won't go on a diatribe about this.
That's a topic for another podcast, but one we should dive into at some point, because I think that's a curiosity that nobody's really thought much about.
Just going to dive in here real quick and say Teruaki Sato is 27 years old. He's hitting .314 with a .1013 OPS so far this year for the Hanshin Tigers. Thank you.
I'll take it. Thank you, sir. All right. Thank you. I'll have one of those. At Mr. Ed 315 asks, what adjectives best describes this Phillies season? Now, I'm not a writer. I mean, I write words sometimes for articles and whatnot, but they're informational. There's nothing grand about what I write. So I'm not great with adjectives. You guys are writers. I mean, one of you wrote a book, for crying out loud. And you used a lot of adjectives in your book. So I might come to the published author for this first. One might say too many. No, I'm going to come to the published author here first and ask, if you have any adjectives that leap to the forefront of your mind to describe this 2026 Philly season, Justin.
I think the word is erratic. I feel like that captures the back and forth nature of this team. It's extreme inconsistencies. There's a lot of all or nothing. You know, there's a lot of the fans have spent a lot of weeks very excited or completely devastated and like about the present and the future. So erratic, I feel, is an appropriate term. But I also a comparison I started to draw because it's August. It's like the most brutally uncomfortable part of the summer and potentially the year, depending on what temperatures you prefer. But it's, you know, it's gross. It's humid. There's thunderstorms like every 15 minutes, depending on where you live. And, you know, there's just, there's a lot of, they're like an oscillating fan is, I guess, what I'm building up to. Just like you're sitting in a room. It's like really uncomfortable. Everybody's sweaty. And then just for one blessed second, you get a burst of cool air and then it turns and goes in the other direction and you're boiling alive again. And that's the Phillies experience. I feel watching them this year is just a slow rotating back and forth that never gets really comfortable because they're never facing the same direction for very long.
I like that. Liz, what do you think? What do you an adjective you and I use?
Let me see. I could use a 10-cent word, but why do that when I could be cheap? The word I would use is confusing or confused. One of the two, I think, fits. And it's sort of the same thing as Justin said. I just couldn't use erratic because he had used it. You know, I guess it's less about how they act and more about the why, because that's always sort of unclear. Why is Trey Turner seemingly a good defenseman up until he came to Philadelphia? What is happening to him and why? And I don't think you can just chalk it up to age. And so there are a lot of whys about what's been happening on the team this year that don't have solid explanations, that have multiple ideas. It's just been confusing. This is not a team with an identity, really, except this is a team without an identity, really.
Yeah. I would use the word dizzying because I was trying to think of how I would describe a roller coaster. And that's what this team has been on this year. This team has been riding a roller coaster. They are a demented carnival owner, and they are taking us on a stupid ride where you're starting out of the gate and you're just screaming downhill, starting off 9-19. And then all of a sudden, you know, you fire your manager and now all of a sudden you're up, you're rocketing up and you may be doing a loop. You know, and it's a lot of fun, you know, as you're taking the season by storm and everybody's now back on board again. And then you hit the All-Star game and then you're back, you know, back down the chute again as you start to fall out of playoff positioning. And now I don't know kind of where we are. I feel like we've kind of maybe we're coming down off of that hill and starting to level off a little bit. And I don't know if we're going to get another hill. I don't know if we're going to get another valley. I don't know if there's going to be a peak. I don't know if the rest of the season is going to be kind of like if we're going to have an August and September like they had last year. And then I don't even know. I mean, you can't even. It's possible that the roller coaster, when it gets to October, just ends in midair and you fall into the sea. I just don't know what this is like. You've all had those nightmares where you are on a roller coaster or something and you fall out of the car and you start tumbling head over feet into the ocean. Right. I'm not the only one who's had that. Right. Right. Listeners. Right.
I think the question becomes, What do you think they're capable of? Like, what do they prove that they're capable of? Because a guy's not hitting, everyone complains, like, why won't he hit? And then after a couple of weeks of that, it becomes, well, why can't he hit? And they had firmly moved into the camp of like, oh, he can't do it in regards to Alec Bohm. And different from like Bryce Harper, who I think people still hold out hope. Oh, when he's not hitting, the expectation is still that he's going to find it again and be a great hitter for this lineup. And that's where, like, you run into a wall with this team because you're just waiting to see who's going to have the success and how long it's going to last, because it never seems to last for, like, a full season. I mean, I think the best you get from these guys individually is, like, you get a half a season, and then there's some rough patches where things, like, and again, it's not even just rough patches. It's, like, drop-offs, huge drop-offs where, like, how many weeks did Kyle Schwarber go without a home run? Like, 3 weeks? Like, there was a big chunk of time where a guy you really come to rely on in your offense isn't hitting. And that's why, you know, you don't sound perhaps maybe as gushing and glowing about a team that just completed a sweep against the Twins, which I am happy to see them do. And they, you know, they did that by doing the things they hadn't been doing since the All-Star break that had cost them so many winnable games. And so seeing them win three games in a row is excellent. That's what they got to do. But at this point in the season, all you can hope is like, okay, well, I hope this is showing us now, again, what they are capable of doing moving forward, because that's what they got to do. You know, a fun little weekend is great and everything, but it's going to be September sooner rather than later, and you got to keep that momentum. So, like, what are they capable of? And did they prove that they were capable of what we need them to be by sweeping the Twins? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And we'll just have to see. Like I said, this is a big week coming up in for the Phillies in the wild card race. So I think the next one I want to talk about is a little bit of Bryce Harper. We've got a couple of people asking about Bryce Harper in the leadoff spot. At Fitzmarrow asks, why not Harper at leadoff? And we also had at the Smarty Jones asked not to ever concede anything to. Well, there's actually somebody who's been advocating quite a bit for Harper to go into the leadoff spot. I don't need to say his name. But anyway, the point is that nobody has come to the plate more often this year with two outs and nobody on base than Bryce Harper. So if he keeps walking like this, should they consider Harper in the leadoff spot?
I think that Bryce Harper didn't sign this deal and come here to do, like, he's supposed to knock in runs. Bryce Harper should be in the middle of your order knocking in runs. Like, he'll do anything, and he'll say he'll do anything, and he'll bat anywhere, but he wants to be in that third spot. And yeah, the counter to that is, okay, but is he doing that? And perhaps maybe we should be using him in the way that he is proving himself to be most useful at any given time. And in this case, if he's working a ton of walks, maybe that is time to move him into a spot where it's, you know, you want somebody who's getting on base all the time. But I don't know, man. Harper is Bryce, like, Bryce Harper is walking should be a part of his game, but I don't know. I don't know if you, these guys have been moved around and shuffled about so much this year. I'd love to just see him get in a groove as, like, a middle of the order hitter and a guy who knocks in runs, because that's what his job is to do, and that's what we know he can do. So I don't know. I'd be really reluctant to just make a move like that. It feels like that's the kind of move you make because your team is constantly in flux and you're just looking for something to hold on to. And yes, I know, based on how we just described the Phillies, perhaps that is exactly what they're doing. But yeah, I just feel like his fundamental purpose would be lost.
Liz, agree? Disagree?
I agree. I think that, yeah, he definitely didn't come here to bat leadoff. But, I mean, and I think that's definitely the reason he hasn't been doing it, is because just the general deference to Bryce Harper, whether it's been, you know, told, you know, that, he, you know, he should do it or not, Mattingly definitely has a deference to Harper. In that, I mean, unless Mattingly is blind, or does it do his job very well, he has to see the numbers. And so, I mean, you have to conclude that the only reason he hasn't been asked to do it is because you can't ask him to do it. You have to tell him, and right, you don't want to do that.
No. Yeah. No, he doesn't want to do it, and he's not going to do it, and they shouldn't force him to do it.
Exactly. And you have to accept that, as annoying as it is, this is part of baseball.
Yeah.
You know, just the same as guys hiding their injuries and, you know, a certain sector of people, you know, making fun of guys who take more than one day for paternity leave. Like, this is just part of the game, and it's time to accept it and just sort of go on like that. This is the way things go.
Yeah. Well, I thought those are good questions. We had a few others roll in. I'll do some mailbag questions on the midweek edition of the podcast as well. And we'll knock out some more thoughts as the Phillies get ready for, again, this big series against the Marlins coming up, starting on, is it Monday? Yeah, they play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week against the Marlins for a big series at Citizens Bank Park against the Marlins team. They handled pretty well last time in Miami, but the Marlins are still right there in the wild card race. So let's finish up this podcast, as we always do, with some final thoughts. Justin, final thoughts from you, sir.
Well, just to keep trying to steer in a positive direction and feed off the three-game sweep. One of our questions we didn't get to was, does Stott playing third make Trey Turner a better shortstop? And I agree with the person. I think that it does. You know, I'm not going to break down the X's and O's here, but Stott is such a natural defender. I've described Bryce Harper as liquid baseball that just fits into whatever compartment you put him in. Stott feels like he's kind of entered a state like that as well, especially defensively. And, you know, playing next to a slick gold glove level defender, you know, perhaps that does wonders for you. You know, I can't point to exactly why, but, you know, a change like that and playing next to a great defender like Bryson Stott, sure, maybe that's having a positive impact on Trey Turner. Again, at this point in the season, I'm willing to believe anything.
Yeah, maybe Stott has a little more range and maybe Turner doesn't feel like he has to do as much. But, you know, that's a good point. Not sure, but it'd be interesting to hear what the Phillies coaches might say about that. Liz, final thoughts from you.
My final thoughts are a little personal. 8 years ago on Tuesday, my husband asked me to marry him. We were at a Phillies game at the time and a whole bunch of our friends were there. It was really awesome. And then a year later, almost by the day, on the day, we got married at a wedding that had a lot of Phillies elements in it. And so my husband doesn't listen to this, but I love him dearly, even though he doesn't listen to this. And so happy anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary, guys. It's very cool. Congratulations. How many years is it now?
Wedding, it's been seven.
Seven. Yeah. Wow. Time flies, everybody.
Doesn't it, though?
It truly does. It truly does. Well, like I said, the Phillies have a big series this week coming up against the Marlins and three more against the Cardinals. Going to want to make sure you're with the baseball team and with the podcast this week as we take you through these big games here as the Phillies are trying to secure that second or third wild card spot in the National League. That'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And if, again, you want to watch this episode of the podcast, all of the roundtable editions can be viewed on the WHYY YouTube channel. So just subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel and you will find us there. If you are an audio podcast only type person, we are at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And please tell your friends and family members about the show. If they don't have time to watch the game, they can listen to the podcast while they're folding laundry. So we can help you out in a whole bunch of different ways. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.